This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Everybody, hope you had a great day off. Maybe you had Columbus Day off, or you had a good weekend. Something, right? Give us something positive. Boy, people, we have to lift our spirits up. I'm seeing this everywhere that I go. It's rough, right? We are tired of the push-pull, the polarization, some of the things that we've seen, the nonsense with traveling, which now I'm a part of that. My name is Kate Delaney. Thanks so much for joining us for this version of the show. There's a lot coming up, including a conversation with John Gibson. He wrote a book about O.J. Simpson, sort of. It's a novel. It's about a detective, really. And it's interesting because he covered the O.J. Simpson trial, and he talks about that. He talked about that when I asked him about covering O.J. Simpson, and I thought it was worth many of you hearing that because I enjoyed our conversation to hear what he said, and also creating this story because everybody wanted to know, where's the knife? So it is a novel, but he covered the story, and it's interesting some of what his thoughts were, you know, into doing the story about this detective. So that's coming up a little bit later on the show. All right, what is happening across the country that affects you and affects me? Well, airline travel is one of them. Southwest is just cratering. They're cratering because the pilots union is upset about the vaccine mandate. They've gone to court. They've got pilots who don't want to comply, and so they've got the problem of supply and demand. And then there are other issues. There are sometimes weather issues. There are staffing issues. There are probably, I would imagine, some agents who want to quit because they have to be the front lines of people who are furious, and I witnessed that myself. I talked about, if you didn't hear it in the first hour, that I got trapped in Palm Springs where there were people that were flying out, and you got to the airport and it was just an hour from the flight, and then it was suddenly canceled and they were rebooking people 3 days later, which is something that you can't do when you're having to get home to family responsibilities, whatever it is, and you're trapped on the road, right? I told the story, and I won't do it again, but there were two doctors that were standing near me, and I was watching them trying to, because they cared about their patients, imagine, and they were trying to get back for that, not like demanding, you do this to me, and they weren't melting down. They were immediately kicking in survival skills of, okay, what do we do? Who knows how to get here? Have you been to this airport? What's the weather condition? People are helping each other, pulling out their phones. So while half of the people around me were melting down and freaking out, the other half were trying to help the other half of the people, which I thought was kind of good, right? What can I do? How can I help you? Maybe you can get into this airport. I see there's a lot of flights. It's crazy out there, folks. And of course, Southwest had so many flights go down, you know, 1,900. Think of the people that were stranded, and then they're all trying to get rebooked, and that just keeps on giving. That's what it is. It's that awful, awful thing that, you know, happens. All right, you know, we've been talking about infrastructure for, I don't know how long on this show. Hashtag, it's like a verb for me. But one-fourth of the United States is got critical infrastructure that they're at risk of flooding. There was this new report that came out on Monday. Great. The report pinpoints some of the flood risks to the infrastructure, like utilities, speaking of airports, ports, emergency services like police, fire, hospitals, residential areas, commercial property, streets, local roads, schools, government buildings. Yep, we get it. So there is a group called the First Street Foundation. It's a nonprofit and a technology group that works to define America's flood risk. So they were looking into that and coming up with some of the areas too. And this, the report, by the way, called the first or the third National Flood Risk Assessment, Infrastructure on the Brink, looks at floods, including slow motion river flooding, fast moving flash flooding, coastal flooding, storm surge from the ocean. Now, all of us understand all of this because some of us have dealt with this, especially our friends in the Gulf Coast and even in the Northeast and it seems like every nook and cranny in between. So the people at NOAA say, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, say flooding is the most expensive natural disaster in the U.S. and has cost the nation more than $1 trillion in inflation-adjusted dollars since 1988. And we know because we're either in the middle of it, we're trying to help our neighbors to the south, the north, the east, the west, and we're watching the devastation of Hurricane Ida. And we're not built to the level of flood risk that we face today. And that's why the infrastructure deals are so important to get in place, to look, to assess, and look at the biggest risks. Louisiana, Florida, Kentucky, West Virginia, you are at risk. And you know this because you've seen it, right? And then there's people that think they're safe from floodwaters, and then we find out quickly, we're not. Based on where you're built and what that infrastructure looks like. And upgrading it can be super, super expensive, right? Matthew Kahn, a professor of economics at the University of Southern California, said that, and I just saw this quote from him, said high-risk flood zones without proper investment in flood prevention have a lot of hidden costs. So people won't buy homes, businesses won't have their headquarters there. All of that can affect what happens to cities. You know, there are people living nightmares who want to be in the wonderful areas where they are, but know of the dangers now because of some of the things that have happened because of the various flooding, etc., from tropical storms, hurricanes, or, you know, massive sheets of rain coming down, right? Yeah. Crazy. All right. Let's talk about something else that's part of the buzz across the land. And some of that, includes the story of Tropical Storm Pamela that could be a significant threat, but to Mexico. It doesn't look like 120-mile-an-hour winds. There could be Americans visiting there because people are going to Mexico to get a quick vacation if they can get there. And, you know, look out, because a Cat 3, like I said, 120-mile-an-hour winds, not good. So far for the U.S., we don't know, but not any kind of a direct hit that I could see on any maps that I looked at. But Mazatlan, Mexico, they were seeing 70-mile-an-hour winds. There's hurricane watches in place. It's, you know, again, I said this before in the show, so I don't want to sound like a broken record, but warm ocean water, light wind shear, that allows it to intensify, and it could happen over the next couple of days. So you wait and you watch and you see exactly where it's going. It could hit central and northeast Texas, and they could get 4 to 8 inches of rain. But Pamela became the 16th named storm of 2021. Wow. What a year, 2020 and 2021. Stay with us.
What better gift to give your loved ones than the gift of good health? And where better to buy those good health gifts than sunny-bay.com? Hey, it's great that you're hearing this message now, because buying your holiday gifts from Sunny Bay early will save you money. And that's just one reason why Sunny Bay is in business and has been for over 15 years, helping you with fashionable and useful products for better health. See our unique and quality-made travel pillows, or our unique neck and body wraps that help immediate pain relief and deep muscle relaxation. Come in a wide variety of uses, apply hot or cold therapy, and are all made in the USA. See our great selection, affordable prices, and wonderful health products at sunny-bay.com. And remember, order early when our stock is high and shipping is fast. Just click sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com. And happy holidays from Sunny Bay.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Increase your odds, win big, and become extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today. John Gibson. You've seen him on the tube because he was a television news reporter, a network news correspondent, a cable news anchor, a radio talk show. The list goes on and on and on and on, and has done some amazing work in his days both in television and radio. And now he's got this book called O.J.'s Knife, a Mickey Judge Mystery. And it's a crime fiction novel, and you read it, and you're like, ah, yeah, this is the thing that we're always talking about. What happened? What do we think? All those questions that still linger on. And certainly John knows. He covered O.J. Simpson when all of that happened. So, John, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, Kate. Thanks for having me.
So tell me about the book. What led you to saying, you know what, I'm going to write this book?
Well, it just was about time. I mean, all those months that I was doing the Simpson trial, the thing that lingered over everything is, where's the knife?
Yeah.
If O.J. did it, where's the knife? Now, the cops and the prosecutors believed that what happened was that it was in a small backpack that he wouldn't let Cato Kalin or the limo driver touch when they were taking him to the airport, and that it was seen at the SkyCap podium, resting on top of a trash can, and then O.J. went to the plane without the backpack. People saw him walking to the plane without the backpack. So the cops always theorized he dumped it in the trash, the trash got picked up, it went to a landfill, never to be seen again. Now, what my novel does is pick up the story right there and have two guys at the airport who are big O.J. Simpson fans and come to see him and talk to him. They find the backpack in the trash, and they say, well, we're going to take this back to him when he comes back to L.A. tomorrow. Next day, of course, he was back in L.A. and he was arrested, and all that saga began. And these two guys realized, oh my God, we have the knife. Now, the other part of the story is that there's a reporter, a network news correspondent working in the Burbank Bureau, as I did, mm-hmm. who has been cut out of the story, bigfooted. The New York People send somebody in, and he desperately needs to get back in the story because he's about to be fired, and he needs something to hang his hat on. So he gets involved in the chase for the knife, catches wind that these two guys, blah, blah, blah. And it is a story about three parties desperately trying to get hold of this knife, a Armenian gang leader out of Glendale, where it's a big Armenian community, and a South Central drug dealer who's got an indictment hanging over his head and wants to trade the knife for the indictment going away, and our hero, Mickey Judge, who's trying to find the knife so he has the big story that will save his job. And that basically is the setup for the novel.
Yeah, I love the part in the book you're talking about, exactly what you're saying about this Channel 4 newsroom. You say the crews and reporters came back from the field, reporters went to work banging out scripts, then disappeared into edit rooms. And I used to be in television, so you took me right back there. Show producers were flitting around like bees, barking at writers, prodding editors to go faster, you know, the usual stuff, and the phones never stopped. And you say Mickey answered the call. He either blew off callers or transferred the call to someone who could handle, you know, whatever the issue was. But one call caught his attention, and I don't want to give everything away, but you've unfolded, as you said, you set it up brilliantly. So it's interesting because you take us right into the thick of it. For you, what was it like? I mean, paint that picture. What was it like in that newsroom?
Well, you know, for starters, poor old Mickey Judge was not my story. I had the O.J. story to myself completely because I had been fired by NBC News as a network correspondent because New York hated me. And but a part of NBC called the News Channel, which, you know, provides news reports for the affiliated stations. Those are all the local news stations that are NBC stations. They hired me. They said, oh, well, he's there. And, you know, nothing changed for me. I had the same parking spot at the same office. I just worked for different people within NBC. And almost immediately, OJ kills his wife. And all of a sudden, I was doing live shots all day long from 9 o'clock in the morning to 6 at night. And, you know, I mean, I think I racked up somewhere around 10,000 live shots. It was a huge number. There'd never been a story that big. And so in my case, I wasn't Mickey Judge. I had the thing all to myself, and, you know, it did me a world of good career-wise. But I did see that was going on inside the Bureau. Some people were cut out of the story because New York sent in, the flavor of the month, the favorites at the moment. So, you know, I always felt sorry for those people being bigfooted by New York. And, you know, in my case, I probably didn't enter the newsroom more than a few times over that year and a half because we were operating out of a trailer down at the criminal courts building. Under a 45-foot platform that I need to explain. Everybody was doing live shots in that story had to have some part of the criminal courts building in their shot. And the only way to do that was to stair-step the platforms in a narrow parking lot across from the criminal courts building. So up front, somebody was at ground level, and then, you know, the next one was 10 feet up, and then the next one was 20 feet up. And then, well, I was near the back, and I think it was second from last. That was 40, 45 feet up. It was a big staircase. And I would sit up there in a chair watching monitors, watching the court proceedings, watching all the tape that was fed in, getting information from the producer down in the trailer, and just do live shot after live shot after live shot. And you know, as far as I was concerned, it was fantastic. I was 48 years old. I'd been a reporter for, I don't know, 20 years, and I never had a story that big. And I knew this thing was bigger than anything I'd ever seen, and it was probably going to be bigger than anything I would ever see. And so right in the middle of it, Tim McVeigh blew up the Murrah building in Oklahoma City, and NBC said, "You want to go to Oklahoma City?" I said, "No. I'm staying right here. I'm riding this horse." So, you know, it was an amazing scene, and I don't think there's been much to rival it, with maybe the exception of 9/11. Mainly because it went on so long, and there was such intense interest in it. You know Geraldo Rivera, right?
Yes,
and
yeah.
Geraldo had just come off of that awful daytime show where he was throwing chairs around and stuff, and he was trying to reclaim his reputation, and Roger Ailes had given the show on CNBC called Rivera Live, and when this happened, Roger said to Geraldo, "You make this your nightline, covering the hostage crisis. You do this every night." Well, when I first started doing live shots for that show, it was my last live shot of the day, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, when this show came on. You know, the snooty network types around the Burbank Bureau were saying, "Why are you doing that Geraldo shit? Ooh, icky, ee." And 3 months later, when it became must-see TV, the same people were asking me, "Hey, how'd you get that gig? How'd you get that job?" And, you know, it's just typical network snootiness, cattiness. And, yeah. I just had a rollicking good time with it. No, you know, we asked, "Well, so why'd you write this book?" Well, all these years I've been busy. I was doing TV and radio and stuff, and this thing was sticking in the back of my mind. And I thought, well, you know, I'm done with radio. I'm done with TV. I'm getting to be an old gent. I have time to do this now. So I wrote the novel.
Yeah, wonderful. What do you hope people take away from reading O.J.'s Knife, A Mickey Judge Mystery by John Gibson, who we're talking to, which you can get on Amazon or Barnes & Noble?
Yeah, well, I hope they say, "Gee, that Mickey Judge is an interesting character. Did you write any more, John?" Yes, I did. There are two more coming. So it's a continuing character. Please stay tuned for number 2 and number 3.
All right. We can't wait for that. We'll have you back on. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Kate, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Fun butter of fun butter, the fun butter them. He's a hot knife. He makes my heart a cinema scars. We show him the dancing bird of paradise. The fun butter of fun butter, the fun butter them. He's a hot knife. He makes my heart a cinema scars. We show him the dancing bird of paradise. He excites me.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Okay. Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News. I'm Brad Bernards. Taiwan has called on Beijing to abandon its provocations aimed at the self-ruled Liberal Democratic Island. Taiwan's presidential office spokesperson Cheng Teng-han said the nation's future rests in the hands of Taiwan's people.
Taiwan does not seek military confrontation. It hopes for a peaceful stable, predictable, and mutually beneficial coexistence with its neighbors. But Taiwan will also do whatever it takes to defend its freedom.
While Democrats advertise their 2,500-page, over $3.5 trillion legislation, which aims to expand government social programs to help improve the economic prosperity of Americans, Republicans oppose the increased spending, saying it will create an unhealthy dependency on the federal government and ultimately raise taxes on the average American. This is USA Radio News. President Joe Biden's low poll numbers are simply due to his terrible performance over the past 8 months, former President Donald Trump told Newsmax.
When you look at Afghanistan, that withdrawal was the most embarrassing thing in the history of our country, in my opinion. And then you look at the border where hundreds of thousands of people every couple of weeks are pouring into our country. We don't know who they are. We don't know, in most cases, where they even come from. It's a disgrace what's happened to our country. Then inflation and the economy and everything is bad. We've never had it like this.
Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger Monday called on the U.S. Department of Justice to investigate Fulton County after the county fired two workers for allegedly shredding municipal election-related voter applications. Two workers in the county allegedly shredded paper voter registration applications, all of which were received within the past 2 weeks, the county said in a separate statement Monday. This is USA Radio News.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork. You know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best, deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. That's 800-985-1610.
Virtual green room right now, John Ash, and his book is called In Search of the Dragon Blanco El Nishon. And I think about that as soon as I said the word dragon, and when I talked to John off the air, it conjured up all these really incredible images for me. And his book does that to you. So, John, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Let's talk about how you developed the book. What led you to writing this book?
Thanks for the opportunity to speak. Basically, I had a character or a person that developed the main character, which was Vice Detective. I had been engaged with another writer, and we had written some screenplays for some production companies in Hollywood. And this character constantly came up into my mind, and I actually wind up writing three chapters at that time. And after working with some producers in Hollywood, they were asking, did we have anything else? And I said, yes, I have this Vice Detective. And I basically read them chapters three, which is called Country Bust, in which they're engaged in surrounding a farm in Cecil County, Maryland, that was engaged in growing illegal cannabis. And they had to go and bust it as a federal investigation, all based on true events. Most of the events in the book are based on true crimes, and then I added my other characters in to the mix and gave it a storyline.
Yeah, and so you described that well. If you know, we break open the books, what tell us more about the story itself?
Yeah, the story itself in a nutshell, again, it's a part of three books, a trilogy. And this is the center book. It's the middle book. And it basically, I like to know what I'm reading, sort of like when I pick up a book, do I want to invest the time? So I like to tell people about this. It's written in sort of a linear fashion because the first two chapters about his childhood and how he sort of innate ability to understand crime and how things happen. And it gives him a desire to go on. So then he gets to chapter three. He's already a 10-year vice. Chapter three is starts with the bus, the country bus, and then he receives a warrant to go to Miami, Florida, to pick up this alleged criminal that was engaged in murder in Baltimore. And the book basically is about 8 days of them traveling. The characters push the narrative. I don't date it or time it. They just get there. And they get involved in a meticulous struggle to find this character. And it's under the federal investigation, seven states, wire authorizations and all these kind of things. However, the critical information that he needs to go on is all wrong when he gets to Miami. So it's an investigation that actually falls out of control.
Yeah. Well, you can imagine what could happen between Baltimore and Miami. And as you said, there's two more books that are all part of this because this is the middle book. When you sat down and decided, okay, you had this screenplay 20 years ago, you have these ideas, you're putting them in the mix, did you imagine you would come up with three books?
No, I didn't. When I sort of cantered off the country bus, I understood that there were crimes in Baltimore related to Miami, to also a large harbor cities that a lot of contraband can float into and through and be distributed. There were similarities between the city, and I liked that. I was excited by that. But then after the story unfolded, I thought, well, I had ideas of the character, how he got into the vice, how he started out, and then his personal relationships. And then after looking again at book two, I felt like I needed to write a final edition, which is based on how the crimes are solved and resolved and where the character moves on from there.
Wow, so interesting. Was it fun to pull all this together and make it happen?
Yeah, it's a real adventure. The characters that he encounters, just in dealing with country bus, when he meets a negative character, it's a detective that pretty much assumes he knows what's going on in the crime scene, but doesn't do any investigation or a forensic. So it's often negative characters in our lives that push us into the positive realm of things. As a kid of only 14 years old on a crabbing expedition, he finds this body and he starts to put the evidence together in his own head very quickly. And he really stumps the investigating detective from the local police department, who just says, no, it's just an accidental drowning. But this young kid actually has evidence that it is a murder, and because he's only 14, he gets really rejected by his aunt, his mother, his best friend, the police department, and he winds up traveling home that night alone after a crabbing expedition where they were out having fun and catching crabs in the Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah, I can think about that, too, having grown up not too far from there, thinking about the whole idea of, wow, what would happen if you were out there crabbing. So In Search of the Dragon Blanco El Nishon, what do you ultimately hope people take away from this specific book and reading it?
Well, the character itself is highly driven. He's sort of like an alpha in terms of leading investigations. He leaves himself vulnerable in certain areas and breaks protocol. So there's a big there's some subtext in the book about conversations about protocol, how it's taken out, and is it really helpful in crime investigations, and what is the purpose of it? And he breaks protocol twice, even though he's a veteran detective, and he's working with Afghan veteran named EJ, who is recently out of the military and trying to learn the ways of the Vice Narcotics Detective Group. And they're in competition for each other, unfortunately. So I think what I want the reader to see is the complexity of doing this kind of work and how dangerous it is, utterly, incredibly dangerous, because you're dealing with vicious criminals who do not respect life. And in many instances, it's your life against theirs. Absolutely. And so where does protocol go? So that's kind of a philosophic riddle there. But yeah. The complexity, not only that, the control that these narco groups have in the United States is just overwhelming. The facts are it's close to $30 billion. They don't have a number on it, the feds, but that's going out of Florida, just Florida alone, into the Caribbean islands and South America from narco trades. So it's a huge business. They're well organized. And in my research, I found that many times federal agents and state and local are just unprepared to deal with these people. And also often it becomes fatal for the police department and their families.
Yeah,
so the crimes in Florida are just unmistakably larger than the rest of the country.
Yeah, boy, isn't that the truth? We see that all the time when we're watching crime shows, et cetera. So after this, which, of course, you can get the book at Barnes & Noble or Amazon, where do you go? Are you going to write some more books? I can't imagine. I mean, obviously, you've got this gift, and you've gone through three. What's next?
Yeah, my next book that I'm already writing and engaged in, because the other two are already written, and we're going to be editing and then rewriting before the trilogy is released. But the one I'm working on now involves quantum physics science fiction based on some of the new facts and findings that scientists are able to see with the Hubble telescope and some of the other great telescopes in Hawaii that we can see into the space. And these new theories of warp time, things like that. So I'm very excited. I have my characters are in Carroll County, Maryland. This story, I think, is going to be unique. I think it's going to boggle the minds of some people that are involved in science because there's so many new theories coming out about the fabric of time being warped and how it affects the Earth and the universe and the Milky Way system.
Mm-hmm. Wow, so that sounds like a blast diving into that too as well. John, thanks so much for coming on. It was fun chatting with you.
Well, thank you very much, Kate.
This is Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes, and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Increase your odds, win big, and become extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire fireplace grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
What better gift to give your loved ones than the gift of good health? And where better to buy those good health gifts than sunny-bay.com? Hey, it's great that you're hearing this message now, because buying your holiday gifts from Sunny Bay early will save you money. And that's just one reason why Sunny Bay is in business and has been for over 15 years, helping you with fashionable and useful products for better health. See our unique and quality-made travel pillows or our unique neck and body wraps that help immediate pain relief and deep muscle relaxation. Come in a wide variety of uses. Apply hot or cold therapy. And they're all made in the USA. See our great selection, affordable prices, and wonderful health products at sunny-bay.com. And remember, order early when our stock is high and shipping is fast. Just click sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com. And happy holidays from Sunny Bay.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Rosser McDonald is in our virtual green room. What an interesting background he has. We're going to talk to him about his book, Real Prison, Real Freedom. But he's got quite a broadcasting background. He is a writer who spent like 16 years plus, really, reporting news on television in Oklahoma and Texas, then 28 years as a producer at Radio and Television Commission, SBC, 12 of them. He produced and scripted documentaries to use on NBC TV stations. He won a couple of Emmy nominations, and he's won a lot of Telly Awards, which is a big deal. It's the cable TV version of Emmys. And he's had an interesting life to boot off the air and producing things, and we're thrilled to have him with us. So, Rosser, thanks so much for coming on.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Real Prison, Real Freedom is about Ricky Smith. Tell us about the road to writing this book, and tell us who Ricky Smith is.
Well, okay. Ricky Smith had somewhat of a normal early childhood, but then it got a little tougher when he got older. His dad was very strong on him and taught him some negative attitudes and so on. So Ricky eventually got on himself into old petty crimes, a little burglary and stuff like that. But it was enough eventually to get him into prison. And he had a term there. It only took him like 3 years to get out. And then 90 days after he got out, he was back in on a drug charge. The drug charge would have cost him 10 years of his life. But he didn't let it stop there. He added 300 years of sentences to his term in prison. Because he was attacking the prison system and the officers and the guards that represented it. So I met Ricky Smith. He was in the most secure, specially built cells called super segregation. And a volunteer chaplain took me back there for me to meet him and to tell me that this man had become a Christian. And he was a new Christian at that time. I mean, that was just a few months or a month or so after he had accepted the Lord. So he was, Ricky was there, still, and of course, in super segregation. The prison system does not recognize the fact you say, okay, I'm a Christian now, so you got to treat me different. Their concern, of course, is security. And so they had to treat him the same way they had been treating him, and they did. But that's how I met him, and it turns out we just kind of hit it off and corresponded, and I visited him a few times. And finally I said, you know what? This is a story that has to be told. So I guess I'm going to have to be the one to do it. So I wrote the book and put the title on it, Real Prison, Real Freedom, because there are two sections in the book, two different tracks of following Ricky Smith along. He was determined, he had been determined that he was going to kill someone, get on death row, and everything would be better than it was where he was in Super Seg. He would be treated better and, of course, ultimately could be crucified, be executed. But that was fine with him. That was okay. But he never made it there because all of his trials ended with attempted murders, a sentence of 99 years, three trials. Two officers and one inmate were the subjects of those three trials.
Wow.
And so he had established himself continuity there in terms of, having he was becoming well known as a violent prisoner and actually in court was described as the most violent prisoner in Texas Department of Corrections.
Wow. So ultimately, though, it doesn't happen. You know, the title Real Prison, Real Freedom, he goes in a much different direction. You said that he had found the Lord. So what did that do to him?
Well, I describe in the book how he went through that. And that was one of the main reasons that I wanted to write the book was to show how you can become a man, the contrast between being the most violent man in Texas prison and a man who says that he is a Christian and will live like a Christian and all that entails. And so that's a process that he went through, and it started with one word, rest. Ricky and some others had gotten so they were determined that they were going to get out, kill an inmate who they considered a snitch, and they were going to kill a guard and so on. But all of their plans failed, and they ended up, Ricky was just completely out of energy. He couldn't do anything anymore, couldn't think anymore. And there was a letter that he had received a couple of years before that told him that in Matthew, Jesus said, come unto me, all you who are laden, and I'll give you rest. And that word rest jumped out at Ricky, and he said, rest, that's what I need. So that started the process in his life there of listening to what Jesus had to say about that rest and looking into, is it real? What's he really talking about? And so on. So that put him on a track then to become a Christian. And then after he became a Christian, he had a long period of learning to change his life completely from what it had been before. which is also part of the story, is helping him to learn what it means to be a Christian after having been an anti-Christian. He had told God earlier, if that's the kind of God you are, I don't want anything to do with you. You can go to hell. And so he had, solidly rejected Christ or the Lord. And now he has come around to say, I am yours, God. And discipleship, there was this same volunteer chaplain was discipling him. He'd come every weekend, and they would work on what you do. You have to forgive people. You have to forgive all of those who have harmed you and all of those you have harmed, and so on and so forth. And then he became actually a missionary, not formally, it just kind of grew to the fact that he wanted to tell people about Jesus. And so he was doing that freely in the prison, and a number of inmates plus some guards learned how to accept the Lord and how to become Christians because of Ricky's influence in talking to them. They were able to see the difference, some of them. But others, they rejected it.
So for you, have you seen Ricky? How many times did you see Ricky?
I talked to him on the phone about two nights ago. They have a system now where he can call me on the telephone. But I haven't actually seen him since before COVID came along because they shut down all the visitations because of COVID. And so it's been a couple of years or more since I have actually seen him. But we talk on the phone frequently, and we send mail, emails, so on and so forth.
Yeah. So it's interesting in telling his story. What do you hope people take away from reading Real Prison, Real Freedom?
But there is a way that you can change if you want to. If things are tough the way they are, the way you're living now, and you determine that part of the reason for that is that you just are rejecting authority and ultimately rejecting God. And that if you can overcome that, if you can learn from that and become one of his children and learn from his word, the Bible, which is, of course, God's word to us, then you can change your life. And that would be a good change for anyone to make.
Real Prison, Real Freedom, Rosser McDonald. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Thanks for coming on the show.
I'll be glad to be here. Thank you.
SuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea builds red corpuscles in our blood, which carries oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate. Our immune system needs oxygen to develop. And cancer dies in oxygen. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
Do you feel like you're doing what you were made for? Do you love what you do? Do you feel inspired or at least pretty happy most days? In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big and Become Extraordinary, I share the secrets that rock stars share with me from the business world, people like Sir Richard Branson, or sports hall of famers like former Cowboy great Emmitt Smith. All of them had one thing in common. They paid attention to their gut, followed their dreams, and didn't listen to the critics. George Eliot says it's never too late to be who you might have been. Pick up a copy of Deal Your Own Destiny on Amazon today.